This is map one. Each chapter in the book is a kind of map, and this one is called Map One, Geographical Solutions, a map of the Middle West with insets past and current. And I'm going to read about the first three pages. The Amtrak depot was cold, which was why I wondered about the young blonde woman across the waiting room from me, wearing sequin flip-flops, her arms bare. She looked to be the age of the college freshman I'd taught the previous spring. Wasn't she chilly in this dank station? I'd noticed her earlier as well because her sweatshirt and pants were so sharply green that I'd almost had to squint to look. I tend to take notes of girls her age, young women with slight bodies and cagey faces, because of how they shocked me back to who I was at 19. Now on a rainy September morning in this featureless warehouse gully of St. Paul, the girl had stripped down to a thin tank top. How could she be hot in this drafty station when the heat still hadn't been turned on for the season? But I forgot about her as we lined up to board the train. The Empire Builder is the name of this passenger line on the west to midwest route along the northern plains. It runs from Puget Sound to Chicago, stopping on the way in the St. Paul Industrial Park, a double-decker Amtrak cruiser with curved and weather-splotched observation car windows. The Empire Builder is not just one train, but a fleet of four, two traveling west, two east, passing each other in the long silence of Montana and North Dakota. Narrow headlight beams intersect in the middle of the night on the far western segment of the route, the whoosh of speed catching for a moment in the vacuum of their passing, lives echoing each other in the occasionally lit up windows, passengers up late drinking or reading or staring out until the whoosh resumes and the meeting is over with a spark, a clank, a long whistle's moan into the dark. I always cringe when I hear the station master announce this train's name. I hate all those parts of American history that are about rounding up the natives and making way for progress. The Empire Builder was the nickname of the 19th century St. Paul railroad magnate James J. Hill, and this train was named in homage to the roots of development frenzy, when the train tracks wrapped the continent in a leash of steel that must have made the old coot lean back in his chair, rub his one good eye, and think, mine, mine, mine. Yet all Americans, even the most put upon among us, might have a little bit of Empire Builder in our makeup, some desire to refine the lost parts of ourselves through locating and owning, landing somewhere and inscribing our names. I recognize the baser version of the urge when I come across stuff I want, from a loft with a view in my home city of Chicago to a sweater with a low neckline I know will cause Linnea to kiss my collarbone, mine. This blank pull of wanting, a desire to erase all obstacles, can reel me into one of those give that girl a crown and a bundle of roses daydreams, the girly version of James J. Hill's long reclined back in a leather chair as cigar smoke forms a crown just above his head. Boarding the train to Chicago, I was trying to pinpoint what it was I meant to regain on this trip back, when behind me someone yelled, "Hey, we need help over here." I turned to see that underdressed blonde girl again. Pale to begin with, she had blanched gray-white, her eyes unfocused, her thin body slouched on the shoulders of two mom-like middle-aged women with hair pulled back into ponytails. These women had probably been looking forward to curling up on the train and sleeping at least until Wisconsin Dells, and now they had this kid, they didn't seem to know her, hanging off their shoulders, loose-limbed as a straw girl. The line moved forward out of the station and toward the platform, but when I looked back a few moments later, the girl was lying down flat on the floor. Her feet had fallen askew. A silver ring glinted dully from one of her wan toes. A paunchy station master with thinning hair leaned over her shouting, "Are you conscious? Can you hear me?" Even though the guy was yelling, he sounded calm, unruffled, almost bored, taking care of his daily routine. The women who had been holding up the girl crouched around her now as if they were conducting a seance. The station master called an ambulance on his walkie-talkie. Was the girl having a seizure? Maybe she hadn't eaten yet this morning. Maybe she hadn't eaten in a week. She was skinny enough to be bulimic. There was nothing for the rest of us to do. Already too many people were crowding around the fallen girl. The station master asked folks to please step forward. We boarded the train, most of us craning our heads back twice, three times to gawk. This kind of thing, skinny blonde girls fainting in broad daylight, is always happening on or around Amtrak. It might be something about this train, a long container of change that compresses people together, as in the plot of a 1970s disaster movie, all those lives that wouldn't otherwise intersect stuck together behind a single smoke-spewing engine, dragging them across the prairie. Still, I sometimes take Amtrak back to Chicago because I like the train and don't like planes, and because the train helps me remember times past when I was a skinny, fallen blonde girl myself.